This is Peace Talks Radio, the series on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution. I'm series producer Paul Ingalls. Most people don't associate the world of business with peacemaking, unless you're talking about the many nonprofit organizations around the world, like the one that produces Peace Talks Radio, or your local public radio station, or so many others doing good work. I'd say it's fair to say that most people associate business with making as much money as one can in commerce, and that a successful business or corporation is one that turns a big profit and returns dividends to shareholders. And of course, some businesses earn criticism for putting profits before their employees, or before the environment, or before the people living near their facilities. Today on Peace Talks Radio, Suzanne Kreider's conversations with some people in business who are doing it differently than that. Business, social justice, fair labor practices, peacemaking, community building can go hand in hand. We'll hear about a corporation that's helping independent farmers caught in turmoil in Colombia by buying cacao from them with help from peace advocates. Also, the story of a successful food co-op in New Mexico that advocates for fair trade and community connection. And first, Suzanne Kreider talks with Jeff Marcoux, CEO of Dharma Merchant Services, who tells us how his company, among a growing number of what are known as B corporations, works to promote peace and justice.
Dharma Merchant Services, we kind of run under the radar of a lot of people, but we, in essence, we enable companies to accept credit cards. So, you know, one of the most common ones would be PayPal for those who are web-based merchants, but we also deploy equipment and process for retail bricks and mortar stores. So, we're a payment processor.
Jeff, what is a B Corporation and why did you want to get into one?
The history of our industry, the merchant services or merchant processing industry, kind of has a tarnished reputation for deceptive business practices and the like. And I was inspired by companies like Newman's Own and Ben & Jerry's and companies that were giving back in some respect. So that was the genesis behind it. And so when we came across B corporations, I mean, we were thrilled because we didn't realize that there was a movement to enact social change. And that business does have a responsibility to the greater benefit, which is the B and B Corp, benefit of the community. So B Corps has been a great movement. It's international now. And, you know, for real change to happen, I don't think that individuals will ever get to enough critical mass to make that happen. And we certainly can't rely on governments, right, to do the right thing and represent social change. So, but business is ubiquitous. And so, you know, because business it touches most everybody, if business gets on board to enact, you know, these kind of changes, then it will happen. So that's a B Corp in a nutshell. And there is another movement called benefit corporations. And I mentioned that, Suzanne, because it sounds so similar, but many states have enacted legislation which actually recognizes a different business legal type. You know, so you've got S Corps and you have C corporations, but a benefit corporation allows a company to not just exist for shareholder value, not just to create shareholder value, but to create stakeholder value to benefit good in the public scheme somewhere. So we also are a benefit corporation in addition to being a B Corp.
How is being a B Corp an example of corporate peacemaking?
You know, aside from the fact that, you know, my company donates on upwards of 50% of our after-tax profits to the community. At the end of every year, we identify nonprofit organizations in a few different categories. So many of the recipients of our donations are in some way fostering, you know, social equality or peace or health, animal welfare, et cetera. And so, I mean, that is the direct way that we foster peace. But when you're a company that's called Dharma, and, you know, Dharma is a Sanskrit word that doesn't have any one word interpretation or definition, but, you know, it refers to one's path. And you know, our path is to serve others. without question. I mean, even to the point where if a company contacts us and perhaps we're not the best fit for them, we would just guide them into that direction. I mean, whatever's in the best interest of our stakeholders is what we do. And because of that, you know, when we have someone else's best interest in mind, we're actually practicing the Dharma as laid down by, you know, the teachings, Buddhist scripts and such. So everything we do, even in the way that we hold space for others, Suzanne, every call that comes in, you know, the way that we interact with clients and suppliers and vendors and people just inquiring, you know, we feel that's a reflection of our Buddha nature, creating peace and doing it with compassion. In fact, that's our motto, you know, commerce with compassion.
If you're giving away money to nonprofits or charities, doesn't that make your services higher priced than other merchant services?
Yeah, that's a great question. In fact, you know, others may assume that that's the case, and occasionally we have to address that when someone contacts us. But no, we actually, you know, as a company, you know, we have to look at, you know, well, how much is enough? And there are a lot of publicly traded companies in our space, and even privately owned companies that are creating incredible wealth. That's not the case in our company. In fact, we just made a strategic decision that we would raise the lowest paid worker salary here in San Francisco to $70,000 a year. So the ratio of our, you know, lowest paid salary to mine, I'm the CEO, is less than 4 to 1. And in our country, the average CEO to worker ratio is like 350 times. So our intention is that, you know, we're not only fair with our pricing, we're not only fair to our staff and, you know, fair to myself as the CEO, but I'm willing to do that without sacrificing, you know, any kind of increase in cost or quality of service. That's just not the nature of who I am and what the company represents. So we're one of the only companies that I know of that has full disclosure of pricing and policies on our website. It's unheard of in our industry. I know that we're making a lot less money than our competitors are, and we're absolutely okay with that.
And what do you think a business owner could do if he doesn't want to become a B Corp? What could he or she do to build peace in their organization?
Well, you know, B Corp is the best start. And even if a company can't get through the assessment, which is a lot of them, I mean, because literally somewhere on upwards of 40,000 companies have started this B Corp assessment. But in the world right now, there are only about 1,400 companies that have actually gotten through it. So it's not an easy task. It takes a tremendous commitment on behalf of management and employees to accommodate this assessment. But there are so many ideas that the company can get from at least going through the assessment, you know, that would help foster greater peaceful relations with their own staff and with the people who buy goods and services from them. I mean, it's really important that all businesses start to take a look. It reminds me of when the green business sector just started coming into business. I mean, everyone had to shout from the rooftops, "We're green, we're green." But, you know, at some point, Suzanne, maybe it won't be in my lifetime, but at some point, all businesses will be green because that is the right thing to do. And consumers have the most influence on how businesses, how they act. And so at some point, you know, my belief is that most all businesses will jump on board and be a part of this. And by the way, it doesn't take all businesses. It doesn't even take 50% of businesses. I was just looking at some research online that said that for change to take effect, it really only takes about a 10% threshold for massive change to take place, you know, for people to adopt a whole new worldview. It really only takes about 10% of people to do that. And that is the point at which change can happen. So, you know, if people are thinking, oh, it'll never happen because we would never be majority, that's not the case. Change can take place with a much smaller percentage.
Hear our complete interview with Jeff Marcoux, CEO of Dharma Merchant Services, at our website, peacetalksradio.com. And more from it, too, in our hour-long version of the program, available on the website, too, peacetalksradio.com. Maura Burse is our next guest. She's with Peace Brigades International, a nonprofit organization which witnesses for peace in many corners of the globe, including in Colombia. There, PBI helps a group of farmers merely maintain their business of raising cacao beans amid the ongoing battles between rebels and the government, linking the farmers with the Lush Corporation, which makes soap bars from the cacao. Here's Suzanne Kreider.
Maura, tell us about the peace community in Colombia.
Colombia is a situation, Colombia is a country that has, for the past nearly 60 years, going on 60 years, has been mired in an internal armed conflict. So that's meant that within the country, there has been guerrilla warfare, insurgency fighters, as well as paramilitary style groups, often allied with the armed forces, particularly in the past, and a situation in which those who do work to support human rights, to advocate for peace, support victims, have often been stigmatized, been defamed, been threatened, and at times even killed. It's also a situation in which massive numbers of people have been displaced, forcibly displaced from their homes. Colombia actually has, after Syria, the second highest number of internally displaced people in the world, a little known fact. That has meant that a lot of small-scale farmers from rural areas who, you know, made their living through subsistence farming have been pushed off their land over the last several decades due to the armed conflict in Colombia. One of the regions hardest hit by the conflict has been the what's known as the Urabá region, which is in the northwest of the country near the border with Panama. In that area lived a number of small communities and rural farmers who, after having been displaced more than once, several times, said, you know what, we've had enough. We want to stay on our land. We want to continue to protect our livelihoods. And we don't want to be pawns in this conflict. The conflict in rural areas has often been a situation in which those who civilians are caught in the middle. One day, you know, guerrilla fighters might come to your farm and hold a gun to your head and say, feed us and shelter us for a couple days. And so many farmers have felt that they had no choice but to do that. And then a few days later, you know, the military might come along or paramilitaries and say, you collaborated with the guerrillas, you're a guerrilla sympathizer, we're going to threaten or kill you. And this community in this area said, we've had enough of that. And so in 1997, they declared their neutrality. They said, we know that international law recognizes the neutrality of civilians, what's known as the principle of distinction. And we want to call upon that to protect ourselves. And so they built fences around their community areas and declared themselves the peace community, and since then have been fighting to remain on their land, to resist displacement, and also to build a model of subsistence farming that can support them and be just and sustainable.
Maura, there are three principal players. There's the peace community in Colombia, there's Lush Corporation, and there's also Peace Brigades International, where you work. Tell us about your position at Peace Brigades.
Sure. Well, I am the Colombia Project Advocacy Officer, based in Washington, D.C. And so my job is to share with policymakers in Washington, as well as the NGO community and public supporters, about what's happening on the ground in Colombia for human rights defenders like the peace community of San Jose Apartado members, as well as the overall human rights situation in Colombia, and make suggestions and policy proposals and the like to help shape U.S. policy to better support protection for human rights defenders and the human rights situation in general.
Tell us about the Lush Corporation, what they do and how they got involved in Colombia.
Sure. Well, the Lush Corporation got involved in Colombia through one of PBI's offices based in London, a support office that developed a relationship with Lush, which is a company that seeks to support fair trade projects and environmental protection and other social justice initiatives through their company's operations. And Lush was interested in supporting the peace community, having heard from PBI about its work to create food sovereignty, economic sovereignty, and autonomy, and protect its community members in the conflict in Colombia. Lush developed a relationship actually directly with the peace community to export cocoa, so chocolate essentially, cocoa beans that they then could process and use in producing a massage bar, use the coconut, the oil from the cacao to produce a massage bar that they sell in their stores.
Maura, what is Lush doing that is extraordinary or brave for a corporation that feels important?
You know, one of the things that Lush is doing that is really different than many other companies is creating long-term relationships with communities like the San Jose del Portillo Peace Community that provide long-term support for the community itself by a direct relationship in purchasing their cacao beans. So the peace community, this is one of their main sources of income. And so besides the, you know, the food crops that they grow, that they eat themselves, they do need to make some money in order to send their kids to school and buy clothes and things like that. And so having a direct relationship with Lush, in which they are every year purchasing a certain amount of cacao beans at a fair trade price, Lush is helping support the peace community's livelihoods as well as their long-term project of resistance, of staying on their lands, of resisting displacement, and supporting local peace-building initiatives. And that's something that many corporations are only seeking short-term profits and not thinking about the long-term and about sustainability and about supporting communities.
How do you think this work with the peace community is relevant to our listeners? Why should they care what's happening?
Well, I believe that what happens to one of us in one part of the world affects us all. We're all human beings, and I believe that we should all care about what happens to all of us. But also because, you know, peace building is something that and specifically the peace building work of the peace community is a model for other parts of the world. It's served as a model for other communities in Colombia, but also communities around the world. And this idea of standing up for what's right, of defending one's life and livelihood, is something, and the courage to do that in the face of really real physical danger, is a source also of inspiration. For those of us, you know, here in the U.S., we might not have the same kinds of, say, violence that we confront, and certainly not an internal armed conflict, of course. But there are also struggles and issues that we face in our own country, you know, that need to be changed. Issues around, one thing that has been a major focus recently has been police brutality in this country, and racialized violence. And, you know, and in situations like that, there's a lot to be learned from the courage and the perseverance of the peace community and other Colombian human rights activists.
More with Maura Burse. Our full interview with the Peace Brigade's international worker at our website and in our hour-long program. Find it at peacetalksradio.com. That's peacetalksradio.com. Another way of doing business with peace and justice in mind are co-ops. You may very well have a food co-op or a credit union or some other co-op business in your community. We do in our hometown of Albuquerque, New Mexico. Suzanne talks with the membership coordinator of La Montanita Co-op, Robin Seidel, who tells us how co-ops work in communities to meet needs and ultimately contribute to peace.
For full disclosure, I want to say I am currently a member of the La Montanita Food Co-op. However, I didn't ask them to be a guest because of that. I asked because they're a long-standing company with really good cooperative values. That's why they're here. Robin Seidel, What is a cooperative?
Well, there are many definitions of the cooperative depending on what kind of co-op you are. La Montanita is a consumer-owned co-op, so we are owned by a community of shoppers and consumers that own the business. An international definition is that a co-op is an association of autonomous and independent individuals coming together for mutual aid and mutual benefit.
What kind of mutual aid?
It depends on what kind of co-op it is. If it's a consumer co-op, as in our case, we purchase in bulk and then we sell those foods and those products to the community that owns us. If it's a producer co-op, maybe a bunch of farmers are coming together to market their products together to have a better economy of scale in the marketplace. If it's a childcare co-op, a group of families might come together to help each other take care of their children. So co-ops really come together to meet the needs of a community of people. Then it benefits all the owners of that co-op.
You must have decided to be a co-op, not another regular corporation. What's the difference between a co-op and other companies?
Oh, there's really a huge difference between the co-op economic model and the corporate business as usual model. We all know how the corporate business as usual model works. If you have extra money, after you put a roof over your head, food on the table, shoes on the baby, you go to the stock market and you buy shares of stock in that publicly traded corporation. And for every share of stock that you can afford to buy with that extra money, you buy another vote in that organization. So people with more money or more resources suddenly become more equal. But in a co-op, we have a different model, and that is we say one person, one vote, that's it. Doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter how much money you have, you cannot buy more votes in a co-op organization. So we really think of co-ops as true economic democracies because of that democratic one-person, one-vote structure.
Are cooperatives nonprofits?
No, we are not 501c3s. We make profits, and then we return the profits that we make to the community of owners. And that is something that a nonprofit organization cannot do. They can reinvest their money in the organization, but they cannot distribute that patronage to the community of owners, to enrich that community of owners.
If you distribute the money, is that based on, what's it based on?
It's based on patronage, how much you use the goods and services of the cooperative organization that you own. And so the more you come to La Montanita and buy your food there, the bigger your patronage return is. And that's another key difference between the co-op structure and the corporate structure. In the corporate structure, your return is they want unlimited returns. You know, they don't care where they dump their toxic waste. They don't care who dies in a sweatshop fire in Bangladesh. They're out to get as much profit as they possibly can for their owners. Unlimited, based on the investment, that extra money. But at co-ops, it's based on patronage, how much you use the goods and services of that organization, and it is limited based on your patronage. So that's another key difference between the co-op structure and the corporate structure.
Robin Seidel, how is being a cooperative an example of corporate peacemaking?
Well, when I think of what all that's going on in the world and when communities are not in peace, I think that it is directly related to a lack of access to resources and the unequal distribution of wealth and the suffering that that causes in communities, that lack of access to resources. And because co-ops are more egalitarian because everybody gets an opportunity to be an owner and have access to those resources. I really think if we are going to create a more peaceful world and a more just world, the co-op economic model is key in that creation.
What kind of peacemaking do I do if I shop at the co-op rather than like a big chain grocery store?
Well, you're supporting your friends and neighbors in the community. We know from many economists that there is a multiplier effect. When you take a dollar and you spend that dollar on a local product in a locally owned store, that dollar multiplies many times before it leaks out of the community. If you take that same dollar to a big box store, a big corporate chain, immediately 73 cents leaves the community and only 27 cents stays in the community. So I don't know about you, but I would rather see all of us in this room today get to use my dollar that I'm spending on tomatoes, broccoli, potatoes, green chili, whatever it is, right? That we all get to use that dollar before it leaves our community. So just creating that community wealth, that again, sharing of resources is key in peacemaking when you shop at a co-op or when you help a community form a co-op.
Robin Zeidel, what are reasons that people give for not shopping at the co-op?
Mostly, I think they think that we're some weird hippie organization, or they think it's a really tight little club of some kind and they're not joiners. Really, anybody can shop at La Montanita Co-op, and at most food co-ops, you get a variety of benefits if you are an owner. And I think people also don't understand that we pay the true cost of production for many of our products. And so are our prices a little higher than the big corporate chains that have hundreds or thousands of stores that they have a huge economy of scale to purchase with? Yes, they are. But we also are making sure that all our staff gets paid a fair and good wage, that we pay 80% of their health care and their dental care. Moms and dads get maternity leave. We give all our staff 50 cents on every dollar that they put in their 401k. We match that by 50 cents. So we're trying to create a work with dignity environment. And all of that, doing it right, doing it in a sustainable way, means we probably have a higher overhead than some of the big corporate chains vis-a-vis our size, proportionate to our size. So I think that that's why some people don't always understand the importance of the co-op model and what that means in our communities in terms of building community wealth, and how that egalitarian model that it is so important in sort of true democracy.
You can hear more from Robin Zeidel of La Montanita Food Co-op in Albuquerque, New Mexico, in our complete interview with her, or just more in our hour-long program at our website, peacetalksradio.com. That's peacetalksradio.com, where you can go to hear more from all of our guests and all of the programs in our series dating back to 2002, and find lots of other resources for your own exploration of peacemaking. It's also where you can go to sign up for a monthly newsletter, the monthly podcast, and make a contribution or vehicle donation to support the work of Peace Talks Radio, which is produced independently by the nonprofit organization Good Radio Shows Incorporated, separate and apart from your public radio station. Learn how to help at peacetalksradio.com. In addition to financial support from individuals just like you, more support comes from the McCune Charitable Foundation of New Mexico and KUNM at the University of New Mexico. Nola Daves Moses is our executive director. Allie Adelman wrote and performs our theme music. For Suzanne Kreider, I'm Paul Ingalls. Thanks for listening to and for supporting Peace Talks Radio.